World Ain't Ready, a Les Mis fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 12. Here's something Grantaire had forgotten. It turns out that walking around school with a black eye makes people uncomfortable. Or maybe it hadn't his first time around, when the bruises were just about his personality. Okay, and people being assholes. Grantaire can appreciate that. Maybe it's kind of fucked up to hit a 13-year-old. Even a really, really, really annoying one. But now, kids keep their distance in the hallway, leave a radius around him, and Grantaire had almost forgotten what it was like, not having to wrestle his way through elbows casually aimed at his ribs and feet calculated to trip. He doesn't think it's out of consideration, more that it's hard to gawk at him from close range, but he'll take it. He half wants to run into Vice Principal Javert, flash him a thumbs up, say something like, "Wow, sir, it's a good thing you're here to defend us all from having to look at boys holding hands. I'm getting weepy just thinking about it. Oh wait, that's the broken blood vessels." The whispers follow him from English to government, like passive-aggressive ghosts. When Cosette sees him, she winces, sympathetic. "Your mom says hi," he tells her. "Yeah," says Cosette. She tilts her head.
"Does it hurt?"
He shrugs. "I mean, it doesn't feel good. Probably looks worse than it feels, though. Like, it looks upsetting, right?"
"Want me to help you cover it up?"
she says, holding up her purse.
"I've got concealer, and we're about the same skin tone."
"Nah." At their lockers, Eddie Greer had jumped and literally taken a step back. The skin still hurts, but Grantaire actually forgets how freaky he must look most of the time. Other people can't. There's a certain kind of power in making them flinch. Grantaire might be standing taller than he has been, walking with his shoulders back. Maybe some people can stand to be a little upset. Cosette smiles, as if he's done something cute. "Imagine I'm raising an eyebrow," he tells her, because he doesn't want to risk moving his face muscles.
"I think this relationship's been good for you, that's all," she says.
"Dating Enjolras?"
"Dating each other," says Cosette. "It's like, you're a little more serious, and he's a little more, like, sometimes now he'll actually talk to me about stuff that's not the hole in the ozone layer."
Grantaire tries to imagine Cosette and Enjolras having a heart-to-heart. In his mind, they're getting pedicures with cucumber slices over their eyes, because that is just the kind of shit his mind pulls. "What do you talk about?" he asks.
"Oh, just what we did over the weekend, stuff like that," she says. "Music. He didn't do that before."
Cosette smiles again, says, conspiratorial,
"I think he's gotten less weird about being a real boy, you know?"
"Pinocchio? Seriously?" says Grantaire. "Maybe he's slightly defensive, but come on. Of all possible choices, a singing puppet in Lederhosen? There's half a dozen Disney princes alone that would..." Cosette laughs.
"You know what I mean," she says. "Anyway, after Jolie's party, when he had..."
She gestures at her collarbone, and Grantaire can feel his face heat, reflexive.
"People in calculus were staring, and when I offered to lend him my scarf, he said pretty much the same thing. Like..."
She lowers her voice and tries to school her features into Enjolras-level intensity.
"Let those bigots stare."
"How do you get Pinocchio out of that?" he protests. "Because he is just not equipped to think about Enjolras walking around acting proud of the mark Grantaire put on his neck. Showing it off, almost. Social statement or not, there is a mental image Grantaire probably shouldn't dwell on. Shouldn't dwell on in public, at least." At lunch, Eponine listens to the story of what went down before school with her hand tightening and retightening on her spork, like she honestly might shank someone. "What are we doing about this?" she says, leaning forward. It's addressed to the table at large. It's a fool's errand, and not even one where Grantaire can help by pulling out a marker and drawing something. Instead, he keeps zoning out, tracking the rise and fall of their speech,
melodic, like distant music. Courfeyrac answers, then Enjolras, then Musichetta. Enjolras is sitting on one side, Éponine is on the other. They're both so close, it reminds him of a game from middle school drama, having to work together as a three-headed monster. Mostly he focuses on that, on their breathing. He's too warm and his side is cramping, but he doesn't want to move. "We're gonna find this fucker," says Jeanne. Grantaire nods, indulgent, and lets the sounds wash over him.
"Your prom photos are gonna look so badass,"
is the first thing Barrel says in Con Econ. Grantaire has to smile at that. 15 years from now, all the ABC kids will be squinting, confused, at their photo albums. Who was that weirdo with the messy hair? Why had he apparently come straight from a bar fight?
"Speaking of which," says Barrel, businesslike, "you've got a tux rented and all that, right?"
"Already got one. My uncle got remarried last summer, and it was a whole big thing. Eye sculptures and shit." Grantaire had spent most of the reception hiding out by the service entrance with his oldest cousin, passing a flask back and forth. It was that or trail behind his parents all evening, really soak in the look on their faces when anyone asked them what Grantaire had been up to lately. Instead, he got a first-row ticket to the look on their faces at the end of the night, when Grantaire was too drunk to open the car door on his first or second try. The tux had actually been the least agonizing part of the experience. It's still hanging somewhere in the depths of his closet.
"Just checking, man,"
Barrel says.
"Yo, you going to Battle of the Bands this Thursday?"
Grantaire hadn't been planning to, but this is shaping up to be a rough week. And in all honesty, the less time he has to brood on his own, the better. Loud music is just icing on the cake.
"Sure,"
he says.
"Rock."
Barrel gives him a solemn high five. It turns out, and really, Grantaire should have seen this coming, that they're watching the same documentary that Enjolras had put so much effort into skipping. 30 seconds in, he can see why. Well, Enjolras probably would find it offensively capitalist, while Grantaire just finds it offensively boring, but yeah. For the record, Grantaire would also much rather spend the hour in a small dark room, quietly stroking Enjolras' hair, than listen to a narrator describe what a food court is. Not that it's at all the same situation, but the point is, Grantaire is 100% relieved when Barrel starts a note-passing campaign. At least, he is until he actually unfolds the wad of notebook paper stealthily tossed at his head.
"Okay, dude, can we talk about what really happened Friday?"
The lights are off in order to better set the scene for this idiotic video. It means he can't really look over and read Barrel's expression, gauge how much trouble exactly he's in.
"What?"
Grantaire scrawls, stalling. Grantaire watches Barrel frown, then grab his pen and write something, intent. It's an unusual degree of focus from Barrel, and Grantaire has to imagine it means nothing good. The second bad sign comes when Barrel hands the paper over, instead of chucking it or folding it into a little sailboat or wedging it into Grantaire's shoe.
"You disappear, come back smelling like weed, and then Enjolras says you had a fever? Come on."
Shit. Shit. Grantaire had been counting on Enjolras' cover-up abilities, but the guy can't erase memories, and Barrel did see them that day. It makes some amount of sense that, of everyone in the ABC, Barrel would know how pot smells. It makes some amount of sense that, if Barrel knows how pot smells, he could also tell Grantaire was high. Grantaire has no idea what to say, how to let the question rest without yanking down the whole shaky scaffolding of lies. Maybe sensing that nothing like an answer is coming, Barrel reaches over and plucks up the note. A few seconds later, the paper returns to his desk.
"For the record, bro, I am not judging. People who live in glass houses, and word on the street is your parents are a bag of dicks, so guessing they won't get you Prozac. But if Enjolras knows you're self-medicating, why couldn't he guess why you'd stepped out?"
Grantaire squints down, trying to pretend the problem is Barrel's terrible handwriting.
self-medicating. Like Grantaire's got cancer. Grantaire's parents are not exactly huge fans of his, but he has no doubt that if he came down with, say, leukemia, they'd shell out however much was needed for treatment. Except, what Barrel actually thinks he needs is Prozac, like a person with depression or something. Where does Barrel get these notions? Like so many things about him, it is a mystery. Still, it's an easy out served up on a platter, and Grantaire has no other good options. He didn't know about the self-medicating, he writes. He passes it over and watches Barrel scribble a reply by the flickering blue glow of the TV. Fuck, dude. That is something you tell your boyfriend. Surprised he was so chill about it, but I guess E has a huge soft spot for you. And makes sense this bullshit would fuck with your mental health stuff. Mental health stuff. He can't get over how confident Barrel is with his crackpot theory. Are there people going around saying Grantaire's got brain issues? On the screen, footage of escalators plays under up-tempo music that would have sounded dated even before Grantaire's birth. On the paper, Grantaire writes, "Who told you about my mental health stuff?" Barrel takes a long time on the reply, like he's fucking composing a novel or something. It gives Grantaire ample time to invent all kinds of paranoid possibilities, rumors that could be circulating. Not just queer, but queer and crazy. He's trying to remember to take deep breaths when Barrel gently tosses the note back.
Wasn't that hard to figure out, dude. Freshman year, all you did was sit around being sad and drawing fucked up shit. Thought you were just a bummer person. Don't know if it's depression or etc., but now it's obvious something was up. Luckily, you're friends with the one group in school who won't be assholes about it. Do you see Mr. Muriel?
Mr. Muriel is the new school psychologist. Except it feels weird to call him a new anything because he's basically a million. Grantaire has only ever seen the guy from a distance. He looks like a cartoon tortoise, down to the neck, the bald head, the little glasses. Even his Hawaiian shirts somehow add to the effect. Jolie meets with him Tuesdays after school, which Grantaire only knows because it's why they always do algebra practice on Wednesdays. He's vaguely aware that Jolie's visits have something to do with the panic attack thing. He thinks Jolie might have some kind of disorder. Jolie doesn't hide it, but he never makes a big deal about it either. Just acts like it's normal. It probably is to Jolie, living with it every day. Hard to imagine. Except, well,
freshman year, all you did was sit around being sad and drawing fucked up shit.
Maybe not impossible. It's different, of course. He can see how it might have looked from the outside, but Barrel doesn't get it. Grantaire's never had the luxury of some handy diagnosis to explain why the inside of his head is so shitty sometimes. Grantaire doesn't hyperventilate or throw up. He doesn't feel endlessly sad all the time, and he's never wanted to kill himself. He used to read the pamphlets in the nurse's office and wonder if there was something wrong with how his mind works, but it doesn't fit. Nothing's ever fit. Grantaire stares at the matter-of-fact words, shrinking and compacting as they near the edge of the page. Depression or etc. He imagines lying on a therapist's couch. Help me, doc. I've got a bad case of etc. He flips the paper over and writes in the top margin, nope. And then, because that seems maybe suspiciously curt.
Thinking about it, though.
Jolie won't shut up about how great he is Barrel's response.
Kid went on a 15-minute rant in Panera last week. Frightened some children.
The mental image is a welcome relief.
Well, I was on the fence, but shit, I want to scare kids in Panera,
Grantaire writes. The mood must be lightening, because this time, Barrel has folded the note down into a dense triangle and flicked it into Grantaire's backpack.
Follow your dream. Also, do you know a good dealer? Mine moved to Delaware. What the fuck? Who moves to Delaware?
Grantaire considers this. Not the Delaware part. He has no answers there. He writes,
I mean, define good.
Eponine gets a discount, but Montparnasse's usual markup is high enough it might not amount to real savings.
He rolls the paper up like a scroll and taps it across Balarel's desk, just as the overhead lights come back on in full, eye-searing force. The movie must have somehow ended.
"Balarel?"
says Mrs. Koval from the front of the room.
"What do you have there?"
Grantaire freezes. She's walking towards them, and all he can think is that Koval is the kind of teacher who will read an intercepted note out loud to embarrass you. She'll go to humiliate them, and instead... He stares at Balarel, who is crushing the paper into a ball like he can render it invisible. Too late. She's seen it. They are both so busted. Passing notes in class about drugs. They are both so fucked.
"Hand it over," she says.
"One sec," says Balarel.
He grabs a water bottle from his backpack and takes a long drink. But there are 5 minutes left, and no way is he gonna be able to stall long enough.
"Balarel?"
Mrs. Koval says again. She reaches out.
"No, yeah, be right with you,"
Balarel says. And then, very calmly and without breaking eye contact with her, he stuffs the whole page into his mouth. Mrs. Koval doesn't quite seem to know how to respond. She and Grantaire watch his jaw work, like a sarcastic cow. Balarel chews for what feels like a very long time, swallows again, and sips his water.
"Sorry,"
he says, still sounding a little parched. He coughs.
"You wanted something?"
"Detention," says Mrs. Koval, and Balarel raises his eyebrows.
"For drinking water?"
"Quit while you're ahead," she snaps.
"Okay, that's probably fair,"
says Balarel, unbothered. He turns to Grantaire.
"Tell me what happens at the meeting tonight. Got a feeling it's gonna be a good one."
Grantaire nods. Balarel destroyed evidence for him. It really does seem like the least he can do.
"The hell was that?"
says Grantaire when the bell rings.
"If we'd been texting, would you have taken apart your phone and eaten it? Where'd the freaking spy training come from?"
Balarel grins and gestures back at Grantaire.
"Oh, come on, dude. Seriously, tux plus black eye?"
He sounds almost wistful.
"That is some James Bond shit right there. I mean, if you want one too, it's probably not that hard,"
Grantaire points out, to which Balarel looks way too thoughtful. Grantaire's algebra quiz comes back with a B+ on it, and he sits there looking blankly at the top of the page, thinking that there must be some mistake. Jolie's good, but he's not a miracle worker. You'd really think a math teacher would have a handle on totaling points and stuff. Grantaire flips through his answers, free of red corrections more often than not. It's eerie. "Grantaire?" says Molly. When he looks up, she frowns. For really the first time today, he regrets his ghoulish appearance.
"Are you coming to the meeting today?"
she says.
"You weren't there on Friday."
"How do you—"
He stops.
"Wait, were you there?"
She nods, only rolling her eyes a little. Why did nobody keep him informed? Granted, there's been some other stuff going on, but still.
"Feeling better?"
she says.
"I mean, other than the—"
Molly waves a hand at her face.
"Maybe."
The painkillers and ice have long since worn off, but it's nowhere near the memory of first impact.
"What happened?"
"Lauren Harris said somebody jumped you behind the school."
"What?"
says Grantaire.
"Who?"
"Lauren Harris," says Molly, disbelieving.
"She's really popular."
Grantaire has to laugh at that.
Molly, dude. Being a popular freshman is like being famous in Canada. You gotta accept the rest of the world is not gonna know who you're talking about.
"Lauren Harris?"
she says again, like Grantaire doesn't know who the president is.
"Why?"
says Grantaire.
"Wait, is she cute?"
"She's 14, and you have a boyfriend,"
says Molly, flat.
No, I meant—"
"She's not as funny as she thinks she is,"
she says with a sniff.
"Also, maybe she's a liar because it doesn't seem like you're in a coma."
A coma, Grante repeats. A coma. Wow, I'm pretty chatty for a guy in a coma. Molly rolls her eyes.
I noticed.
When he walks into Miss Hoosierloop's that afternoon, Molly's not there yet, but shockingly, Eponine is, lounging in a chair in the middle of the room, backpack at her feet, like it's perfectly natural. If she's not going to react, Grantaire won't either.
Am I driving you home today?
He says.
Nope, Musichetta.
She nods at the desk next to her.
Saved you a spot,
she says, like they're not surrounded by other empty chairs.
Thanks, he says.
When Molly comes, she brings two other freshmen, although they both look too skittish and mousy to be the famed Lauren Harris. More importantly, she brings a big Ziploc of homemade oatmeal cookies. Grantaire keeps waiting for someone to explain how there's no snacks in Justice Club, but when Enjolras does enter, he barely seems to register it, deep in conversation with Feuilly. Not everyone is so focused. Jolie takes a bite and waves his cookie in the air.
My favorite food in this very room, he shouts.
Dude, says Musichetta, you've got like 6 favorite foods.
16.6 repeating percent of my favorite foods.
Aw, you don't need to buy our love, young Molly, says Courfeyrac, from where he and Jeanne are sharing a chair.
Fuck no,
Eponine slurs, mouth full.
Don't listen to him. Our love for you is dangling by a thread, kid. Keep him coming, and we'll see.
As she chews, she nabs 2 more cookies, wraps them carefully in paper towel, and tucks them into her backpack. Molly blinks at the open display of selfishness, although Grantaire would bet money they're for Gavroche. Combeferre is the last to arrive, cradling a messy stack of printouts.
Okay, then, says Courfeyrac loudly. We've got some new faces, so maybe we should go around and introduce ourselves, then explain what's going on?
Grantaire regrets taking the seat next to Eponine almost immediately, because she will not let him zone out. If he tries to draw something, she'll wrench the paper away.
Set a good example for your baby lesbian,
she whispers.
I am not a role model,
he whispers back.
Also, she has a name. Fucking pay attention,
hisses Eponine. And then Combeferre turns and looks at them, which makes her kick Grantaire in the shin. Which is completely unfair, since she started it on every conceivable level.
So here's the situation, Courfeyrac says when the introductions have gone around.
And maybe it's true that Grantaire did miss the names of both new kids. Not that it matters so incredibly much, given how little time you'll be spending with them. One more meeting until prom. Courfeyrac untwists himself to stand.
You newcomers have found us at an interesting moment, he's saying. First of all the out kids in this school are in the room right now. All 4 of us. Should we raise our hands, or...
Grantaire can't help thinking that, even without the high school rumor mill, it's at least half obvious. If Courfeyrac and Jeanne had been sitting any closer at the start of the meeting, they would have been wearing the same pair of pants.
You mean they can't tell us by our incredible fashion sense? Says Grantaire.
And Eponine snorts like she psychically knows his whole outfit is stuff he found on his floor that morning. Courfeyrac tactfully ignores this and continues.
The 4 of us have been harassed over the past couple months. Slurs, property destroyed, and today, Grantaire was physically attacked in the hallway. He smiles, crooked and sarcastic. Maybe it's all just a crazy random coincidence, but it's starting to feel like there could be a pattern here.
The other part of the pattern, Enjolras chimes in, is that the school administration has done nothing to punish the people doing this, and nothing to make us feel safe, or like our safety is even the goal. We've tried to talk to the vice principal and the principal in the past, and it gets us nowhere. So today is about trying to figure out the next step. Combeferre?
Yeah.
Combeferre nods at the stack of papers in his hands.
I've been looking into what the chain of command would be here for appealing a decision past the principal. As far as I can tell, we'd want to schedule a one-on-one with the superintendent.
I have his name, phone number, and email address. Fuyi? Fuyi lowers his hand. That's great, he says. And if that doesn't work? If that doesn't work, says Combeferre, we go to the next school board meeting and we make a public, formal complaint. He shuffles through the papers. The next one is exactly 1 week from now, at 7 p.m. If we haven't gotten to talk to the superintendent by then, there's another 1-2 weeks after that.
Okay, says Eponine. And like, nobody lose their shit, but if we can take a second to imagine that maybe the school board isn't gonna care.
After that, we would be filing a complaint with the State Board of Education, Combeferre finishes. I have their address and a couple of phone numbers. Enjolras?
How long do you think this whole process would take?
Says Enjolras.
Start to finish.
Combeferre shakes his head. I mean, I have no idea. But my sense is, a long time. Definitely they could drag this out until after the school year ends. I'm not actually saying this is what we should do. He sighs. Just, this is what it looks like if we play by the rules.
Bossuet is raising his hand.
Yeah?
Barral wrote a statement to read in his absence, says Bossuet.
He said, pick a relevant moment, so...
Bossuet clears his throat.
Have we considered that maybe the solution here could be punching someone? Or ideally, punching a lot of someones?
We don't even know who we'd be punching yet, points out Jeon. You can't punch the abstract notion of homophobia.
If anybody could, though, Bossuet says.
Then...
Sorry, is it my turn to call on someone? Cosette.
I think we should maybe also consider getting the press involved, says Cosette. There's a lot of writers in the group. We could manage a pretty good letter to the editor. Explain what it's like going to school here if you're LGBT. How the administration won't even meet with...
Technically, they did meet with us, says Grantaire.
Just to tell me and Enjolras we were in trouble for PDA.
Wait, when? Says Musichetta.
I mean, don't get me wrong, you guys are nauseating, but it's all in the googly eyes and the dumb smiles. You're not, like, grabby.
They didn't like that we were holding hands, says Enjolras.
Grantaire flashes back to the way that confrontation ended, with Enjolras kissing him in the vice principal's office as Javert told them to leave.
It is possible his eyes may be a little googly at the memory, but he thinks he's allowed.
One corner of Enjolras' mouth slides up, and Grantaire realizes that moment is the closest thing they've had to a victory against the administration since they started all of this. If only the solution to their problem was more kissing, Grantaire would bravely volunteer.
Well, that definitely goes in the letter, says Bossuet wryly.
I don't see the local paper caring any more than the school board, Grantaire protests, and Cosette shakes her head.
Not the local paper, she says. Every paper we can think of. Cities? Colleges? I mean, let's send one to the New York Times. What does it hurt?
We humiliate the school into doing something, says Enjolras, looking much more intrigued than he did with the school board stuff. If we drag their apathy into the spotlight, at some point it becomes more of a hassle for them to put up roadblocks than it does to just help us and be done.
Breaking news. Being queer in a small town is not a fun time, says Grantaire. I mean, we better all pray that absolutely nothing interesting happens and zero celebrities die, because I don't see the story gathering much.
Actually, says Eponine slowly, I mean, if you look at it from the outside, two rich, cute white boys, one is a total honor student, whatever, and the other with this tragic past, all the bullying and shit, who've only ever dated each other. And you can do a whole thing like, I only want the guy I like to be safe, blah blah blah, it's all for love. People would eat that up with a spoon. A lot of people would. It's a good idea.
She throws Cosette a small, reluctant nod that almost makes Cosette fall out of her chair.
Oh my god, says Jolie reverently. We could probably get Enjolras on TV!
At this, Enjolras starts to look queasy, but the energy in the room is picking up.
We'd want to keep it very calm and to the point, says Combeferre. People think high schoolers, they'll be ready for something overdramatic and ridiculous. We stick with the facts, but the facts themselves.
You guys are going to be famous,
Jolie enthuses, and something in Grantaire's stomach clenches.
Angelos, says Grantaire. Can I talk to you outside for a sec, hun?
I know, says Angelos, once the door is shut behind them. By the time the paper's printed, we won't be doing this anymore.
Grantaire rubs at his face and nods.
You probably shouldn't even say we were dating, because it'll play into stereotypes about gay and bi people's relationships being shallow or doomed or whatever.
Yeah, Angelos agrees.
We can't use Eponine's angle at all.
Probably not.
Fuck. It's hard not to sag against the wall of lockers, let something else support his weight for a while. The metal is cold but solid against his back. The superintendent's gonna do jack shit, the school board will yawn us out of the room, and it's hard to pin our hopes on the Board of Education riding in to rescue us. There's a long pause, and he realizes he's waiting for Angelos to contradict him. It's hard to imagine this working if we stay within the system, Angelos says, instead. Nobody in charge seems inclined to listen to us.
Well, yeah, we're bad kids, says Grantaire.
He points to himself. Loud stoner with a long string of detentions? He points to Angelos. Known troublemaker, threw a shoe. At that, Angelos almost smiles. It was a political statement.
That makes it worse, man, Grantaire tells him.
A radical.
You're dangerous.
Not dangerous enough to get anything done, says Angelos wearily. And something about the way he slouches reminds Grantaire that, for all that he can sometimes seem like he's 100 feet tall, Angelos doesn't even have a driver's license yet. If they painted the whole mess as a story of young love, all of the shit that keeps them from getting taken seriously, their youth and lack of life experience, Angelos's general prettiness, could actually work for them. Grantaire bites his lip. If we worked really fast, he says, and wrote a letter today in the meeting, and sent it to the papers before 5, even then, if they did any kind of follow-up, which we'd want them to do, by the time they got in touch again, we wouldn't be together, says Angelos. And it's a fair point, but it still feels like watching their best possible chance of success drop into a garbage disposal. What if we didn't break up, though? Grantaire hears himself say. There's no law saying we have to stop on Saturday. If you don't mind keeping you going a bit, we could... Is all Angelos needs to get out before Grantaire's stupid brain catches up with his even stupider mouth. I appreciate the offer, says Angelos, and the fact he's being kind about it hurts so much worse. Like, he's got to protect Grantaire's delicate feelings. But I don't think that's such a good idea. Angelos isn't even meeting Grantaire's eyes. That's how uncomfortable he is. Because apparently, there is no bottom to how embarrassing this moment can be. Apparently, it goes on forever. A humiliation black hole. Maybe Angelos's sexual orientation doesn't involve time travel, but suddenly Grantaire is wishing his own did. That he could spin himself back a few seconds, long enough to impart some valuable wisdom about shutting the hell up.
For one thing, Angelos is saying, what if a journalist is smart enough to figure out what's going on? The stakes are starting to get too high for us to keep lying. It'll be hard enough to convince people about the things that actually happened, and...
Grantaire has to cut him off fast, before the panic at the back of his throat can condense into bile.
Yeah, no, I get it, man, he says.
He blinks, nods, wedges his hands into his pockets, starts a staring match with the floor tile. Anything to distract from the weather systems whirling behind his eyes.
That's cool, it was just an idea, so...
It must fail, because Angelos says, much too serious. Grantaire, I really, really do appreciate that you're trying to help.
Trying to help. God.
Grantaire swallows hard.
Not a big deal.
I mean it, says Angelos. He takes a deep breath.
Look, we haven't talked about it in a while, but I don't see why we can't be the kind of,
of pretend exes that are still civil to each other. If you wanted to keep coming to meetings after, there's nothing stopping you from... The bile is on its way anyway, apparently. I don't think that's such a good idea. He gets out, and then he turns around and yanks the door open. When he steps back inside, Angelos close behind him, it feels like everyone in the room is watching them. We're holding off on contacting the news for at least a week, says Angelos, with finality. Musichetta is scribbling something on a paper on Eponine's desk. Cosette, Fuyi, and Jeanne are crouched in front of it, too. Grantaire has a sense it might be the first draft of a letter.
Are we going to vote on this?
Says Musichetta.
Or will you just, like, wave around a scepter?
Give him a break, Grantaire mutters. But Angelos steps forward to say, being out to the school is not the same thing as being out to the whole country. Can you respect this is a big decision for some of us? It occurs to Grantaire that, to the rest of the group, it'll probably look like they broke up because Grantaire couldn't handle the pressure of standing up to the rest of the world. It will look like Grantaire wasn't in it for the long haul, that he left as soon as shit got difficult. And it's not like he'll ever have a way to prove otherwise. Not like he'll ever need to, even. On no level does it really matter, but still. I would have stuck with you, he thinks, to the back of Angelos's head. So many of the secrets he's keeping are shitty, or, in the case of whatever's going on with Eponine, shitty and incomprehensible. It's nice to have something he can hold for himself. They spend the rest of the meeting talking about how to best approach the school superintendent, who drives a car with a Confederate flag sticker on the back. So really, they might as well address him in Pig Latin, with homemade finger puppets. It's boring and pointless, but the upside is that Eponine stops trying to force him to pay attention, and he spends the rest of the hour drawing an owl dressed like a detective. It takes a lot of concentration, all those little feathers. In the van afterward, Angelos is very quiet. Normally, Grantaire would leave him alone and let him do his thing, but this is one of two car rides left together, and Grantaire is greedy. Also, Angelos has his knees pulled up, which is something it seems like he only does when he's upset. How's it going? Grantaire ventures as they roll out of the parking lot. Everything happens so slowly, says Angelos. It's the kind of thing he's said before, but he doesn't sound angry this time. More muted. He waves an arm. Grantaire catches the motion from the corner of his eye. Everything, not just this. The problems are so big and important and urgent, but there's so many layers of bureaucracy, you can't make anything happen as fast as it needs to. It's like sitting in a burning building, and nobody else will even admit they smell smoke. He sighs. There are days where I wonder how anything ever actually changes, gets better. Well, a little faster with people like you around, I guess, Grantaire says. Then he freezes, hands clenching at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock, wondering if the entire last week of their fake relationship is going to be about helplessly incriminating himself further and further. Angelos doesn't even respond to that, though. What he says is, more firmly than before, we are going to find who hit you, you know. He's slumped in his seat, but he's starting to uncurl. His sneakers are braced against the glove compartment. It's not like Jeanne in the locker room. It happened in a crowded hallway with witnesses everywhere. Hell, Jeanne and Courfeyrac saw him from behind. We're going to... Okay, says Grantaire. What's the next step, though? You realize, if you do find him, trying to make the school do literally anything about it is going to be a whole other giant struggle. Grantaire, 10 seconds ago, you were telling me not to give up, says Angelos. Grantaire shrugs. Yeah, but like, pick your battles, man. Angelos's feet drop to the floor with a thud. In terms of winnable fights, he says, he hit you in front of a lot of people. I don't see how much more black and white needs to... First of all, if he's an athlete, they'll cover his ass no matter what, says Grantaire as they round a turn. Second, it was a crowded hallway, So how hard do you think it'll be for him to find someone who will swear it was someone else? Also, even if you catch him, even if he admits it, the school could still treat it like a fight and not, you know, a hate crime, which would let him dodge most of the punishment and come back to bite me in the ass, since, like I said, I have a million detentions, so it's easy for them to paint me like a bad... What's the purpose of starting out like we've already lost? Angel Ross breaks in. He doesn't sound as testy as he could be, really, for which Grantaire thanks his lucky stars. What does that accomplish? Is Angel Ross seriously capable of making himself think only useful thoughts? Grantaire tries to imagine what the inside of his head must be like. A series of to-do lists, broken up by goofy jokes and weird deodorant preferences. I'm not saying you're definitely gonna fail, says Grantaire. Angel Ross scoffs. I'm not, he insists. I can't picture it working, but I didn't picture the whole sham dating thing working, and look at Jeanne and Corfirac, so... If you didn't think it was going to work, Angel Ross starts. I don't know, man. Grantaire tries to laugh lightly. I don't have the best track record in making decisions. If we try to figure out why I do what I do, we'll be here all night. Angel Ross doesn't laugh, which is, after all, his right. But if we find the guy and the school still doesn't do anything, you should be aware that could happen. I'm not trying to be a downer, he adds. But like, personal experience, okay? Silence. Silence. It's suddenly unbearable. Grantaire reaches for the radio knob. Sorry, says Angel Ross. Sorry, I need a second. And the gritted teeth are audible. I am so goddamn angry at the school, it just... he says. Preach, says Grantaire, with worryingly little sarcasm. Like, he does, literally, want to hear this rant. He stalls as long as he can, taps a rhythm on the steering wheel to give Angel Ross time. But if you rally everyone to track him down, and we find him and the school won't punish him, what's your plan? I'm sure Barral will have some ideas, says Angel Ross darkly. No, says Grantaire. What? No, he says again, close to involuntary. Look, you can't hit anyone. If you're going to say don't sink to their level, Angel Ross seethes. No, obviously. You couldn't sink that far if you tried, but like... Grantaire risks a glance at him. Safe driving be damned. You guess this would ruin any other plan your group can come up with, right? The Board of Education and the fucking New York Times aren't going to listen to a kid who's running around knocking the shit out of people. We have no guarantee any of that will even work, says Angel Ross. The papers, the board, you said it yourself, they might not care. I'm not saying we do it right now, but what if the only form of justice we have is... Grantaire slams his brakes a hair too early for the stop sign. Angel Ross, I don't give a fuck if you wanted to be Zorro when you were a kid. This is not the Wild West. You can't just... Zorro wasn't a cowboy, Angel Ross retorts, maddeningly calm. You've already gotten in trouble this year. If they're looking for a reason to give you shit, and you fucking punch a kid, how fast do you think they're gonna remember that whole anti-violence policy? We're the ones those rules are supposed to protect, says Angel Ross. And anyway, Barral got away with it. Because he was an athlete, Grantaire points out. They had to drop him from wrestling or that kid's parents would have pitched a shit fit. But if I had to guess, they were probably hoping he'd do football instead or something. It's not the same. Javert hates you. He is going to suspend you if he gets the chance. Who cares? Says Angel Ross. You don't go to school for a few days. It's not a bad trade. He says it so offhand, so casual, Grantaire's stomach clenches. He swallows. For one thing, if you make them mad enough, they can absolutely ban you from prom, and then this whole 2.5 months will have been for fucking nothing? Oh, Angel Ross says. Yeah. Grantaire's neck aches, the way it has been lately. He rolls his head from side to side, but the tension doesn't leave. Please don't hit this guy, he says,
looking sidelong at Anjelros, who still does not seem nearly concerned enough.
Grantaire telling Anjelros to care about something. Now there's a sign of a world turned upside down.
I'll try, says Anjelros, which isn't much more of a guarantee than oh.
Promise, Grantaire insists, which is stupid. This isn't the elementary school playground. He can't make Anjelros pinky swear. If Anjelros wants to punch someone, he will. And there's nothing Grantaire can do about that. Instead of promising, Anjelros says, "You really don't think he deserves some payback?"
Grantaire sighs.
"Of course I want him to suffer. I'm not a saint. Just, if you hit him, or if you even act like you're going to do it, and the administration comes down on you, it's not worth it, okay?"
Too much? Too much, he thinks.
Or anyone else in the ABC, he tacks on. And Anjelros doesn't seem to notice. Thank God for his ability to miss every nuance of a conversation.
I won't hit him, says Anjelros.
And you won't threaten him, Grantaire presses, to which Anjelros says, dutifully, I won't hit him or threaten him with violence.
Grantaire's shoulders settle a half inch.
What else would you threaten him with? Hugs?
Anjelros snorts. I'm still not a Care Bear, he says. With the topic safely changed, Grantaire is ready to start singing for joy even before Anjelros twists his hands on the seatbelt and says,
Can we... That one song, can we hear it again?
Anytime, says Grantaire, queuing it up gratefully. They listen all the way through, but it still ends too soon. Grantaire skips back to the beginning without asking. They don't speak, except that Grantaire sings most of the chorus under his breath.
I miss my headphones, says Grantaire when it's over. Walking around, listening.
Yeah, says Anjelros.
Then, what do you think of the rest of this album?
I just have this track, Grantaire admits.
Why, is it good?
When he glances over, Anjelros is shrugging.
I think so, he says.
Anjelros and Cosette talk music sometimes, he thinks, with a queasy thread of jealousy. Anjelros has a whole world of opinions that Grantaire knows nothing about.
You know, says Grantaire, it doesn't have to be my shit all the time. If you want to bring something to play...
We only have one more meeting before prom, Anjelros points out. Grantaire sighs.
Right. Hey, says Eddie Greer.
It's the first thing he's said directly to Grantaire in months. Grantaire and Eponine are sitting around waiting for Spanish to start. It's not a class they have with Eddie. He shouldn't be here.
What? Says Grantaire.
I just... Eddie darts a look around, shuffles his feet, and looks at the floor.
I wasn't trying to... It wasn't, like, on purpose.
Grantaire squints at him.
What?
He says again.
Yesterday, says Eddie.
What did Eddie even do yesterday, other than react to Grantaire's face? Nothing out of the ordinary. Unless there's something Grantaire's missing. He thinks back to that exchange, and it occurs to him for the first time that Eddie might have been wearing a hat and some kind of jersey. Eddie's not in any school sports, but he is a football fan. Grantaire remembers that vaguely from when they used to talk. School colors are blue and white. It's not impossible some actual team has those colors. Eddie had looked at him and flinched. Of course, whoever bashed Grantaire's eye wouldn't have seen it then, too busy scrambling away before Grantaire could turn around. He's shaking, but Eponine's squeezing his shoulder, and he realizes, suddenly, that he's not really afraid. Or he is, but he's so many other things that the fear is getting crowded out. Grantaire swallows.
Oh, he says. You mean yesterday, when you knocked my head into a drinking fountain?
Eddie's eyes widen.
Look, he says. I didn't mean for you to hit it that hard. It was supposed to be a joke, you know?
Grantaire feels like maybe his insides have been replaced with fire. Or coffee. It's scary,
but it also feels kind of good to be this angry all at once. A joke. Like, that's supposed to mean something to Grantaire. Like, that's supposed to calm him down, that his pain is someone else's punchline.
Oh, says Grantaire. Oh, hey, well, if it was a joke, then that changes everything. So just, like, he tilts his head to one side, tucks his fist under his chin. Can you explain it to me?
Eddie walked in pale, but at that, he goes paler. Any more and he'll be almost translucent, and Grantaire won't have to see his dumb, boggled face.
I... is all Eddie can pull off. No, man, take me through it, Grantaire pushes. You know I love to laugh. So, okay, I'm walking down the hallway, and you, I guess, lightly slam my face into a drinking fountain. What's the payoff? Why is it funny, Eddie? What am I not getting?
His voice is climbing. His eyes burn like they're about to start shooting lasers. It almost feels like he could. Please, says Eddie, dropping his voice. My dad just lost his job.
You know?
And Grantaire's words are so crisp it barely sounds like him.
I'm pretty sure I don't actually care.
We're so... I mean, I don't know if we can afford it, Eddie mutters. What the hell is your point? Says Eponine. For the suit, says Eddie. Like, that clears something up. Please, man, I'll, like, turn myself in, but please, don't sue us. Where in the world would Eddie get the impression he was facing a lawsuit? Who does Grantaire know who would be persuasive enough and brash enough to sell it? Some pieces begin to fall into place.
Do you think I'm that nice? Grantaire asks. Thought you thought I was disgusting.
Eddie freezes. I could lose my scholarship, man.
Yeah, what's college gonna do without this one asshole telling the same unfunny gay jokes over and over?
You haven't even said you're sorry, says Eponine coldly.
You fucking jackass.
It makes Eddie jump. Yeah, he says, as if remembering some magic word. Yeah, I'm sorry. I am so sorry.
Well, I don't really think I'm going to forgive you, says Grantaire.
Please, please don't sue us. Please. Eddie's shaking. That doesn't make them even. Grantaire has shook for so much longer. Eponine was right. There's something uniquely unfair about being tormented by cowards. It's not just scary. It's insulting. The clock shows 30 seconds before the bell rings. Grantaire drags the pause out for 20 of them.
Turn yourself in, leave all of us alone for the rest of the year, and maybe I'll think about it, he says at last.
Angelos is already at the lunch table when Grantaire gets there.
Hey, Sugarbean, says Grantaire. Jellyface. Peppercakes.
At the tone of his voice, Angelos turns around, cautious. Grantaire plunks down next to him.
Had an interesting chat with Eddie today.
Angelos pulls the sandwich from his bag and lays it on the table, much too precise.
Did you?
He says, setting his bottle of tea next to it.
That's surprising. He's never struck me as all that bright. Well, he seemed pretty convinced I wanted to sue him, Grantaire says. It was weird, you know? It was almost like maybe someone had cornered him and made a huge deal about their mom being a lawyer. I really am very proud of her, says Angelos levelly. And then maybe didn't explain that she's a real estate lawyer. You know, says Angelos, now that you mention it, that might have slipped my mind.
Grantaire really would have liked to see that, he thinks. If anyone ever had the commitment to work that bluff, paint it not as a sad, hollow threat, but a dire warning. Angelos is maybe the only person who could make legal action so scary from the outset that it wouldn't get his ass kicked.
Oh my god, dude, you're insane, says Grantaire. How did you even, like... We asked around, Angelos says. One of Corfirok's theater friends saw Eddie do it.
Even if the kid in question didn't know Eddie or Grantaire personally, They probably took the time to absorb and memorize every detail of the encounter, just to have a better story to tell later. God bless theater kids. Thanks, Grantaire. God bless Corfirok, who probably charmed it out of them in under a half second.
And then you, what, ambushed him in the hallway and started yelling about lawsuits?
I didn't yell, says Angelos with dignity. I just pointed some things out to him. How, even if the school doesn't care about our civil rights, this country has laws against assault. How 18-year-olds are tried as adults. How much a lawsuit costs. Prison sentences.
He takes a sip of green tea, offhandedly. I might have invented some legal terms. He really is not a very smart person.
He says this as a joke, almost. But seriously, it takes some fucking nerve for Angelos to lecture everyone else on keeping their wits about them, keeping their guard up, and then storm up to confront a bully.
So you just, like, leapt into the lion's den by yourself and started fucking with the lions?
Oh, says Angelos.
No, I wasn't alone. I took Baharal.
Something in Grantaire's stomach sinks. He can only imagine one reason Angelos would invite Baharal instead of, say, Combeferre.
You said you weren't going to threaten to hurt him, Grantaire points out.
Angelos fumbles vaguely for a sandwich.
We didn't, he says. Baharal didn't say anything. He was just there for, moral support.
Grantaire pictures Baharal looming silently behind Angelos, arms crossed. Maybe not making threats, but frowning, cracking his knuckles, using every pre-match psych-out move he ever picked up wrestling at Columbus High.
And for scenery? Says Grantaire.
Angelos shrugs.
Baharal has a deep and abiding interest in law, he deadpans, as Grantaire chokes on a mouthful of chips.
Wow, Grantaire says, coughing.
You're insane, for real.
Is it okay? Says Angelos.
Eddie was almost crying, so I didn't think he was going to cause you any trouble, but I told him to find you in Spanish, so Eponine would be there in case.
Thanks, Grantaire mumbles.
He promised he'd confess to the principal, and we're still going to try to make sure there's consequences,
Angelos adds.
But I don't know.
He takes another sip of tea.
After everything, I thought you might find it kind of funny to see him scared.
He says it so nonchalantly, like,
I thought you might want to borrow a nickel.
Wow, says Grantaire.
Well, that's certainly a blood-chilling way to put it.
Angelos puts the tea down. His brow furrows.
Was I wrong?
The thing is, he wasn't. The level of consideration that went into this kind of makes his throat hurt.
Well, this is what Angelos is like with a plan. No detail forgotten. No minutiae ignored.
The kid does his homework. In this case, that homework involved dangling a homophobic jerk's fear around like a cat toy.
You weren't wrong, Grantaire tells him. I'm not sure how you pulled this off, but it was somehow both creepy and sweet.
Creepy and sweet, says Corfirok, materializing out of fucking nowhere and almost giving Grantaire a heart attack. How does he do that?
Are we talking about Angelos?
How do you do that? Angelos mutters.
And I'm not.
Not creepy or not sweet, says Corfirok, as Angelos seems to seriously weigh which word is more objectionable.
Because your boyfriend's looking at you like he wants to write your initials all over his trapper keeper. Just saying.
Corfirok's not being mean, Grantaire reminds himself, as he reflexively turns back to his food and tries not to hunch his shoulders. Corfirok is, in his way, trying to be nice. Grantaire can't tell whether or not his silence has been long enough to feel weird.
I mean, he says, picking up his sandwich.
He makes himself glance sidelong at Angelos.
You made Eddie almost pee his pants using, like, fake Latin. Can you prove you're not a wizard?
Corfirok pats Angelos on the back.
You hear that? You're his hero, Angelos.
Yeah, says Grantaire, managing something like a smile.
You're my hero.
It comes out at lunch that nobody in the ABC thought to arrange for a prom limo.
Seriously?
Musichetta keeps saying. And Grantaire would be annoyed at her annoyance, except when she sat down, the first thing she did was cut her sandwich down the middle and deftly slide half to Eponine.
Here, help me eat this thing. I've got to fit into my stupid dress by Saturday.
Seriously? Musichetta says again. Jeon coughs.
Is it important we get one? They still let you in if you come in a car, right?
Nobody thought about this, says Musichetta.
Nobody planned anything? Prom is this weekend.
Maybe we had other stuff on our minds, says Corfirok a little pointedly. Remember the rest of this year?
Maybe that's why we should put some thought into not having a shitty prom,
Eponine throws in.
For, like, morale.
Is that what the night is about, though? Says Enjolras. Spending a lot of money on a fancy car? Most of you drive. Is it really so bad if we just...
Musichetta puts down her remaining quarter of sandwich and groans.
If we go in separate cars, it's gonna be such a mess. Bossuet will get lost. Barrel's whole car will be late because he'll insist on going through the Taco Bell drive-in for the sheer comedy. Who even knows what Grantaire's car will do?
At the mention of his car, Eponine sits up straight.
You guys, she says. You guys, I think we're forgetting an important thing. Grantaire owns a giant sketchy van.
I do, says Grantaire. I really do.
It's not that sketchy,
Enjolras protests,
and Grantaire pats him on the arm.
Yes, Pumpkin Mint, you're very brave.
Can your giant sketchy-ass van hold 12 people?
Asks Musichetta, eyebrows raised sarcastically.
If you stack them like firewood, says Grantaire.
There's not 12 seats, but... Actually, Eponine says, as long as people are okay sitting on laps.
And Marius blushes, presumably at the idea of being belted into the same seat with Cosette. Eponine doesn't seem to even notice. She laughs.
I mean, granted, then we're rolling up to the dance in a massive stoner van, but...
No, wait! Corfirok's eyes have lit up. That's amazing! It's like taking a monster truck to prom. We have to do this.
Thanks for offering to drive us,
says Enjolras, which, for the record, Grantaire did not do. Still, the driver's seat is the only spot in the van where nobody will expect him to conserve space by sitting in Enjolras's lap. Eye of the goddamn storm. Which means he's designated driver for the evening. Not like he was planning on getting wasted, but the option has been officially closed to him. Goddamn Eponine and her outside-the-box thinking.
We could take the money we don't spend on a limo and donate it to charity, Combeferre suggests, without looking up from his textbook.
Grantaire hadn't been 100% sure he was even listening.
What's the one with the kids and the dimes? Says Grantaire.
March of Dimes? Says Corfirok.
No, man. The kids and the dimes,
Eponine mouths blankly. But Marius guesses.
UNICEF?
Which sounds right.
Or Doctors Without Borders,
Musichetta suggests.
And really, Combeferre is a smart guy, because maybe the one way to make her stop caring about limos is to turn it into a moral crusade.
We can put it to vote at the meeting, says Enjolras,
because he is Enjolras. Grantaire gives him a pretend fond smile. Enjolras gives him a pretend fond smile back.
You're a lifesaver, Enjolras says.
It's very pretend heartwarming.
Eponine is going to stay home on Thursday night. She is very, very adamant about this.
What did Battle of the Bands ever do to you?
Grantaire mutters, lying on his floor as he finishes his final draft of the first few pages of Astrocat. Eponine doesn't look up from her sewing machine. She hasn't been looking up from her sewing machine lately when she's at Grantaire's house. He has the sense she might be kind of behind on making her prom dress, except she also won't accept his help, which is such bullshit.
Grantaire doesn't get clothes, but he's good at making shit. She knows he's good at making shit. It's like she's determined to make this as hard on herself as possible.
Yeah, dude, she says through a mouthful of pins. Why the fuck would I not want to spend 3 hours in a high school gym with a bunch of people I can barely stand during the school day?
She pulls out the pins and plunges them into the fabric of the desk chair like a furniture voodoo doll, one hand still working the sewing machine. Listening to band after band of angsty rich kids, thinking it's so super edgy to call themselves Death Kill or Punch Strike, yelling about some girl in my chem class who doesn't want to do me, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to anyone on the planet. The machine whirs and hums. It is a goddamn mystery, Grantaire. Jolie said there was going to be at least one ska band, says Grantaire.
Oh,
says Eponine, sarcastic.
Well, if there's saxophones.
If it's shitty, we can hang in the back and poke fun, he offers.
How much is cover?
$5. This is about the cheapest it could possibly be, but Eponine still makes a disgusted sound.
I'm not going to pay money to watch shitty people play shitty music. There's so many ways to get that need met for free.
Grantaire looks up from filling in the inky blackness of space.
Come on, he says.
It'll be fun. Musiquette is going. Her, me, Baro, Jolie, Bossuet. Ever since he found out Eponine was going to prom with Bossuet, he's been trying to rile her up by implying they're desperately in love. He's starting to believe they really are just friends, though, because no matter what dirty jokes he makes or how hard he works his eyebrows, and he's given himself a headache trying, she fails to take the bait.
Your boyfriend's not coming? Says Eponine instead.
My fake boyfriend. Can you picture him at a battle of the bands?
He likes bands, right?
She says, dragging fistfuls of cloth under the tugging needle of the machine.
And he loves battles.
How does he feel about of the, though? Grantaire mutters.
You're such a loser.
Grantaire stretches out on the floor.
Come on,
he says again. Nobody you hate is coming. Nobody you even, like, have shit with. Like, Cosette's away or something, so... The absence of Cosette will all but guarantee the absence of Marius, he doesn't need to add. It's a scientific principle.
I don't give a shit, Eponine bites out. They can go stare into each other's eyes for the rest of their lives, whatever.
Combeferre's not coming either, I don't think, if that helps. The sewing machine sputters.
Shit,
says Eponine.
I sewed over a pin.
Make it a design feature? Grantaire offers. He still doesn't know what that means.
Damn it,
she says.
No, I can fix it.
Ugh. If Eponine has been making her own clothes for years, is it always this fraught? Grantaire shudders.
And I don't have shit with Combeferre,
she mumbles distractedly.
I freaking told you that. He's fine, okay?
She had freaking told him that, it's true. On the other hand, she has not stopped being weird about the guy. Grantaire mulls this over. The way she never fully relaxes when he's around, the lending of poetry books, and Eponine's secret love of pretty words. Wait, Grantaire says. Is Combeferre fine, or is he fine?
That's the same word twice,
Eponine tells him flatly, not getting it on purpose. Deflecting. Holy shit. Oh man, do you like him? He says. He thinks about Combeferre as a kid on the playground, cleaning his glasses and fact-checking their war games, and feels something close to pride. Brainy weirdo Combeferre is all grown up, and winning the affections of badass rocker girls.
Oh my god, Grantaire!
She snaps.
Can you please get it into your head that maybe I have more important shit to think about?
It's a prom dress, thinks Grantaire. It's not like she's defusing a bomb. Okay, he says. He takes a deep breath, commits himself to the lines of Astrocat's spaceship. But like, you don't have work. Musichetta will be there.
I can't go, okay? Says Eponine sharply. Leave it, dude. Leave it.
Grantaire leaves it. She sews like a maniac until 2 in the morning, and when she settles down on the floor with a pillow he's pretty sure is hers, that's how he knows she's staying over. The next morning, while she's in the bathroom, he's searching the floor for a clean-smelling shirt when he finds something boxy and hard-edged under a jacket. It's her jewelry box, the little plastic treasure chest she used to hide her pot in. Grantaire has asked her so many times not to dump her stuff all over his room, but she never stops. There's always more, and he doesn't get why... He thinks of her bedroom, the dwindling furniture, and he leaves that too. Jolie has enough enthusiasm about Battle of the Bands to make up for her, though. Jolie has enough enthusiasm to carry 8 or 9 sullen teenagers on its back. You could crowd surf on Jolie's enthusiasm for Battle of the Bands. Jolie hasn't been this keyed up since... Well, okay. Since Monday, and Molly's cookies. And then since Tuesday, when Grantaire remembered to show Jolie his quiz grade. And then since this morning, at seeing Grantaire's finished Astrocat pages. The point is, Jolie is an enthusiastic guy, and Jolie will not shut up about Battle of the Bands. Supposedly, they're going over Grantaire's algebra homework, except Jolie keeps getting sidetracked by his need to stare into space and tap his fingers on the table and announce to no one, "They're gonna battle it out! Who reigns supreme? Using only music! Ah!" It actually gets to the point where, when Bossuet says, "Man, I'm feeling it too, but these equations aren't gonna solve themselves," Grantaire literally finds himself nodding along, like, "Enough fucking around. Let's get back to math. Are there no constants remaining in the world?" Other than the obvious. Eponine's sarcasm. The ABC's determination. The general shiftiness of the rest of the student body. And the horrifying state of Grantaire's room, van, and hair. Nachos. Fantine being the best nurse in the world. Angelos's convictions. And Grantaire's ridiculous feelings for someone who doesn't love him back. "Oh," says Jolie. "Math." "Oh, math is your superhero catchphrase," says Bossuet. "The denominator. Divide and conquer." "Come on, get cracking," says Musichetta. Bossuet grins. "That's your superhero catchphrase. You've got, like, squirrel powers." Musichetta shakes her head and nudges Jolie's math notebook towards him. She's been a lot more engaged in the tutoring project since they instituted a policy that, if Grantaire calls himself stupid, she and Bossuet get to hit him with rubber bands. She claims this comes from cognitive behavioral theory. Jeanne had looked dubious when Grantaire tried to explain it. Grantaire is more confused they've never been kicked out of the library. When he'd brought this up, she just looked mysterious and said something about well-behaved kids getting away with more shit. His best guess is that Musichetta's got some dirt on the librarian. The thing is, the rubber band attack clause is kind of getting results. At the very least, he's more likely to stay on track. Not that Grantaire is the one who needs help focusing today. 10 bands in one night, says Jolie. "That is 50 cents a band, is that not unreal?" He bobs up and down in his chair. "This is gonna be so cool!" Grantaire throws a glance over at the librarian's desk. She is aggressively pretending not to notice that Jolie is more or less shouting. "I hope you plan on bringing extra socks," Jolie says to Grantaire, "because I strongly suspect they may soon be rocked off." The window of time to actually get the work done is shrinking, and the smaller it gets, the less patience Grantaire has for Jolie's boundless chatter. He's opening his mouth to say, "Maybe cool it with the Battle of the Bands talk, dude," when Jolie sighs and adds, "It's just so nice to have something good happen, you know? I feel like everything that's happened lately, every single thing, it's always bad news. I'm looking so, so forward to just dance it out, you know? Dance it all out." He wiggles his shoulders. "Hey," says Bossuet, fishing change from his pocket. "Want anything from the vending machines, Jolie Bean?" "Yeah." Jolie is still grooving along to some imaginary guitar solo. "What do you want?" "I trust your instincts," Musichetta snorts and grabs her purse off the back of her chair.
Well, I'm coming with, in case your instincts are dumb.
Hey now, Bossuet says, laughing. As they leave, Grantaire thinks he hears her say, "Pizza combos," with an air of a trump card.
If Bossuet has a comeback, it's swallowed up by the double doors.
Back at the table, Joly has folded the fingers of his left hand into rock and roll horns and is trying to draw it with his right, laughing at his own clumsiness. If Grantaire was sucking at something that badly in front of someone else, he would not be laughing. He feels a sudden pang of envy, and then a pang of guilt.
"You want to get in on this?" says Joly. "Professional artist and all?"
"What's Mr. Muriel like?" Grantaire says, without really planning to. Joly beams.
"Awesome. Completely awesome. So, 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 so great. He gets it, you know? He gets it. I can tell him all my weird head business, and he's never like, 'You're overreacting,' or 'Don't cry.' He's like, 'Joly, you have a right to feel what you feel, but that doesn't always mean it's constructive, so let's work on strategies to... blah, blah, blah.' It's incredible."
"Strategies to... what?"
"Oh, like..." Joly shrugs like it's something everyone knows, like this is normal small talk. "Not to ruminate or fixate on bad thoughts, stuff like that."
"Why?"
He grins again. "Ooh, are you thinking of meeting with him?" "You should. Muriel's the best."
Grantaire twists his hands, trying to think of a way to point out that he's not, in fact, crazy. There's no way to put it that doesn't sound like he's calling Joly crazy instead. It's a fucking puzzler. Joly must mistake his silence for some sort of deep inner angst, because when Grantaire looks up, Jolie's fixing him with a sympathetic smile.
"It's scary, right?" says Joly. "That first step, it's the worst."
He twirls his cane absent-mindedly.
"I can come with you if you want, introduce you."
That's okay. Grantaire chews on his lip, wondering how he's supposed to get out of this.
"I think this is something I need to do on my own," he says at last.
"That's fair."
Joly nods, meditative.
"I'm so happy you're gonna do it, though."
He's worked himself into a corner. Either pretend like he started meeting with Muriel, and the guy has no reason to cover for Grantaire, or actually meet with Muriel and pretend there's something wrong with his brain chemistry. Maybe he has Barrel confused, but someone with a psych degree is bound to be harder to fool. Grantaire deeply regrets bringing it up at all. He's not even sure why he did.
"Wow," says Bossuet, Musichetta at his side, bearing the apparently not dumb snack of pretzel bites. "I can't believe he finally got you off Battle of the Bands."
"Oh, frick, yes! Battle of the Bands!" Joly shouts, punching the air.
The librarian doesn't even look up.
But when Grantaire stops by the next night to give the three of them a ride, the scene is more subdued. Joly is leaning heavily on his cane all the way to the van. Bossuet's got his other side, and Musichetta opens the car door for him. They all look a little drained.
"You okay, man?" says Grantaire.
"Tonight might be more of a sitting night," is all Joly volunteers. There's a brand new anarchy sticker on the handle of his cane, and someone, Grantaire's money is on Musichetta, has painted his nails black. Grantaire can't tell if it happened when Joly was still psyched about tonight, or if this was a last-minute attempt to rally. He can't even tell which would be more of a bummer.
"If you're not feeling great," Grantaire hazards,
but Joly shakes his head and says, with surprising fierceness, "If I waited until I felt great to do things, I would never do anything." Bossuet and Musichetta don't seem worried, just quiet. On the way to the school, Grantaire plays them the first track of Bauerl's mix, and they seem to think it's all right, but they don't really get it. If Grantaire's honest with himself, he's okay with that, because it makes the fact that he gets it and Enjolras gets it feel like a bigger deal. A secret handshake in an incomprehending world. Then again, he reminds himself as he puts the van into drive, Barrel gets it too.
Musichetta has him drop off her and Jolie in front of the school. As the van pulls away, she's holding his elbow like a Victorian gentleman, whispering something in his ear.
They're cute, Gontaire says on the ride back to the parking lot. Huh?
Behind him, Bossuet is still mostly absorbed by his phone. It occurs to Gontaire then that, of everyone in the ABC, Bossuet is probably the person most likely to give him a straight answer on the Musichetta situation, so he just goes for it.
Are they together? He asks.
Bossuet looks up from the little screen, blinking like a man coming out of a trance.
I don't think so.
Do you like her?
Musichetta's great, says Bossuet. Also, we're meeting Barrel by the door of the gym. He says he's got a plan, so, let's all try to approach those words with a positive attitude.
Their fear turns out to be misplaced. The plan is almost impossibly reasonable by Barrel standards. He'd managed to wrangle 3 folding chairs, figuring that Jolie and a rotating cast of 2 friends could set up in front of the band, while the rest of the crowd stood behind them. That said, they're thwarted.
Fucking self-appointed parent volunteers, Barrel seethes. It's like, lady, how can you go mad with power when you don't even have any power?
This veers off into something about fascists that Grantaire can't really follow. Musichetta sighs. She said if we sat in the front, everyone else would want to sit and it'd be a fire hazard. I told her this is a medical thing, and she said Jolie could stay, but just Jolie.
I'm not sitting by myself, says Jolie, sounding almost offended. That is so boring.
He and Musichetta have moved their chairs against the wall, as out of the way as possible. The 3rd chair is still folded. Musichetta knocks it back and forth in her hands. Finally, she told us we were welcome to all sit in the back, behind everyone standing. Like it was a huge compromise and we should be touched she thought of it, she reports.
Great, says Grantaire. A whole evening of staring at people's asses.
Don't be cheeky, Bossuet mutters.
And it's not until Jolie snickering that Grantaire even realizes it was a joke.
Do we have to make it a whole thing?
Jolie asks, once he's composed himself.
I just want to have fun tonight. Who cares if we can't see the band? I know what a band looks like.
So they push their chairs behind where a crowd is starting to gather around the 1st band, which is called Accursed, which is maybe an even worse name than the ones Eponine made up as a joke. Grantaire keeps singing, "That's Accursed Pizza Pie," in a bad Italian accent, until Musichetta is grinding her teeth.
You and Bossuet want to take first standing duty?
Jolie offers.
I still want another 5 minutes of Grantaire doing this name bit.
Jolie, you magnificent bastard, says Barrel,
once Musichetta and Bossuet have reluctantly made their way forward. Jolie smiles and ducks his head, but doesn't argue, and Grantaire resigns himself to an unsolvable mystery where the 3 of them are concerned. Maybe not so shockingly, Accursed is less than stellar. Their drummer is off rhythm at all times, just enough to make Grantaire want to jump out of his skin. Jump out of his skin, and then use the resulting chaos to reach 1 skeleton arm over and slap the drumsticks away from this poor fool. Grantaire keeps a better beat bored in class with a pencil in 1 hand. The sound won't carry far enough to make out any of the lyrics, which realistically is only a good thing, but cut off from whatever energy there might be in the crowd, facing only people's backs, it doesn't feel much like a concert.
Wow, they're shitty,
Grantaire says, between songs 1 and 2 of their allotted 3-song set.
Yeah, says Jolie.
He makes a frustrated noise.
I want to be up there. There's nothing to do here.
We could heckle the band, Barrel suggests. Not like they can hear us from down here anyway.
Please, says Grantaire.
Please, please, let's.
When the next song starts up, a loud blur of guitars and bass and deeply mismanaged drums, Barrel cups his hands to his mouth and yells, "Boo!" Grantaire laughs and follows suit.
"Boo! Are you a curse to suck?"
"Boo!
This experience is disappointing," Jolie adds.
Boo!
This is a waste of electricity.
Boo!
I want my 50 cents back.
Boo! You're not even ska!
Boo!
Grantaire shouts.
Send your drummer back to middle school jazz band.
Boo!
Barrel yells, louder. Take your white boy suburban angst and shove it.
Boo!
Jolie screams.
How hard is it to make a flat room handicap accessible?
All of which is to say, Grantaire is not so surprised when the three of them are forcibly ejected from the Battle of Bands. What is surprising is that Jolie is absolutely delighted.
Yes!
Jolie crows from his chair, which they had to carry outside, past the back doors of the gym.
Oh man, is that the most rock and roll thing you have ever done, or what?
It's in my top 10, says Barrel charitably. After the din of inside, the relative hush is hard to adjust to. The sky is as dark as it ever gets this close to the city, that browny pink of used gum on the sidewalk. It's just chilly enough that Grantaire's wishing he had a jacket. How long are we partying outside the school? He asks, rubbing his arms. The party don't stop, says Barrel, and Jolie reaches up to give him a high five. Which is nice, but Grantaire really hopes they're not out here for the rest of the night. Cars swish past them. Somewhere in the distance, a fire engine wails, on and on. Grantaire's phone rings. His stomach dips on the off chance it's somehow Enjolras, but when he fishes his phone from his pocket and checks the screen, it's an unknown number. Weird. Grantaire almost assumes it's a misdial, but on the fourth ring, he figures, what the hell? Hello? He ventures.
Grantaire, oh my god,
says Eponine, except he almost doesn't recognize her because her voice is shaking.
Grantaire, okay, you need to pick up me and Gavroche from the gas station on 5th, the one by McDonald's.
What? He says stupidly. Barrel and Jolie are giving him a curious look.
We're at the gas station by McDonald's,
she says again.
Look, Grantaire, you need to come get us.
Eponine? What happened? The siren must be coming closer. It's louder. Much louder.
They did it,
Eponine mutters, although it sounds almost like she's talking to herself.
Those motherfuckers finally did it.
Eponine, are you guys all right? He says. The fire truck barrels by, shrieking, making his whole body vibrate and recoil. The aftershock seemed to hang in the air, like a bad smell. Or like the black pillar of smoke that is starting to snake up past the tree line. The smoke coming, he knows, from years and months of skipping school, from the direction of Eponine Street. He covers his ear against the fading siren. Dude, do you know what's going on with this fire? There's a feeling in the pit of his stomach like he already knows the answer. Eponine laughs, wild and jagged.
Yeah,
she says.
Insurance fraud.
What?
Grantaire,
says Eponine.
I know you had the thing tonight, but...
From the other end of the line, he hears her take a deep breath, steadying.
My parents burned our house down,
she says quietly.
Me and Gavroche are at the gas station. I need you to come pick us up, okay?